Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 21. Chapter is entitled Explanation of the Vedic Path. Today is text 17. Samana karmacharanam patinam na patakam atpatiko gunasanko shayana patayata. Samana karmacharanam patitanam napatakam atpatiko gunasango nashayana patayada. Please chant. Samana kama charanam patitanam napatakam patiko gunasango shayana patayata. Vaishnavis. Samana karma charanam patitanam napatakam apatiko gunasanko shayana patatyada. Samana equal karma of work. Acharanam, the performance. Patitanam, for those who are fallen. Na is not. Patakam, the cause of fall down. Otpodika, dictated by one's nature. Guna becomes a good quality. Sangha, material association. Na does not. Shayana, one who is lying down. Patati, fall. Ada, further down. Translation and purport by the followers of this divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The same activities that would degrade an elevated person do not cause fall down for those who are already fallen. Indeed, one who is lying on the ground cannot possibly fall further. The material association that is dictated by one's own nature is considered a good quality. Purport. The Lord here further describes the ambiguity in ascertaining material piety and sin. Although intimate association with women is most abominable for a renounced sannyasi, the same association is pious for a householder who is ordered by Vedic injunctions to approach his wife at the suitable time for procreation. Similarly, a brahmana who drinks liquor is considered to be committing a most abominable act, whereas a sudra, a low-class man who can moderate his drinking, is considered to be self-controlled. Piety and sin on the material level are thus relative considerations. Any member of society, however, who receives diksha, initiation into the chanting of the Lord's holy names, must strictly obey the four regulative principles: no eating of meat, fish, or eggs, no illicit sex, no intoxication, and no gambling. A spiritually initiated person neglecting these principles would certainly fall from his elevated position of liberation. Samana Parmacharanam Patitanam Patakram Otpadikao Guna Sango Nashayana Patatyada. The same activities that would degrade an elevated person do not cause fall down for those who are refallen. Indeed, one who is lying on the ground cannot possibly fall further. The material association that is dictated by one's own nature is considered a good quality. Om Aganatum Arandasya Gananjana Shanakaya Chakshur Unitam Dina Tashmai Shri Gurudev Namaha. So in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, there's a really nice verse. Ya shastra vidhim uchrichja vartate kamakarata na sa siddhim avatnoti na sukham na param gatim. So he who discards scriptural injunctions and acts according to his own whims, kamakarata, attains neither perfection nor happiness nor the supreme destination. So this shastra vidhi, or the direction of shastra, is given to different castes and orders of human society. That's quoting from Prabhupada's purport. So in other words, these directions are personalized according to one's situation in the modes of material nature, according to one's conditioning, so that he can gradually be elevated. And if we follow, if a person follows, then he's got a good chance of making it all the way. So in the next verse, one should therefore understand what is duty and what is not duty by the regulations of the scriptures. Knowing such rules and regulations, one should act so that he may gradually be elevated. So shastra is very powerful because it's not, doesn't have the four defects that we as conditioned souls have. There's the tendency to make mistakes, Brahma. And I think we can look back at our last 24 hours and I'll admit that there were some mistakes that we made. I made a bunch of them, some big ones too. And then there's pramada. This is the tendency to be illusioned. I mean, the primary one that we, it's in our face on a daily basis, we're thinking that we're our bodies. But that's a powerful illusion that we're subjected to. And then the cheating propensity, vipralipsa, and then karnapatava, imperfect senses. So shastra doesn't have that. Therefore, it has tremendous validity. And we're not actually qualified because of our conditioning to establish rules and regulations to follow. But shastra, because it's directly coming from Krishna, it has that. So we've gone through like a couple of weeks of head scratching about all of these instructions in this chapter. And we had to bear in mind that these are instructions primarily, of course the purport brings it into the devotional realm, but primarily these instructions are given for people that aren't practicing karma yoga, jnana yoga, or bhakti yoga. They're those that are considered to be fallen. And So it's an opportunity by following them. And that's why there's so much, you know, kind of confusion. Like yesterday we were hearing about how if a house is on fire and someone punches a hole in the roof, you know, to rescue the people that are inside, then that's pious. You know, if he does it without the fire, you know, just goes in and then it's a criminal act. So there was, you know, a lot of devotees would say, what's going on with this? So these are all specifically for personalities that aren't on the transcendental platform, aren't actually aspiring for the transcendental platform so much. So it's gradually bringing them up there. So now, the Srimad Bhagavatam begins with six questions by the sages of Naimisharanya. The second question is relevant to this discussion. I'll just read the translation here. There are many varieties of scriptures, and in all of them, there are many prescribed duties, which can be learned only after many years of study in their various divisions, after years of scratching the head. Therefore, O sage, please select the essence of these scriptures and explain it for the good of all beings, so that by such instruction their hearts may be fully satisfied. So that's question number two by the sages. Anybody know where the answers are? Where the answer is for that? Okay, just trying to activate the cerebral cortex here. Go ahead, bro. Yeah.
I was thinking in a couple of chapters later when Narada Muni was talking to Vyasadeva and telling him about writing scripture, how to write the scripture.
Okay. Could be, but generally the Acharyas say it's primarily second chapter, text 6 and 7, and continuing up through text 28. And so number 6 is Savai Pum Sam Paro Dharmo Yato Bhaktir Hoksajay Ahaituki Apityata Yayatna Supersidity. The supreme, so this is the essence of all scriptures, okay? This is the answer. The supreme dharma or occupation for all humanity is that by which men can attain to the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to completely satisfy the self. So, and then also 7, Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janaya Yashu Vairagyam Gyanam Cha Yara Haitukam. So, by rendering devotional service under the personality of Godhead, then one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment. So this is the essence. It keeps going. You know, there's a whole progression of verses. Prabhupada quoted these this whole sequence. What's the name of the poem that he wrote on the Jaladutta? Dharma, right. Markine Bhagavad Dharma. Preaching Bhagavad Dharma in the West. And what a challenging situation he faced with that. Another, at the end of this, in the purport to this verse I read from the 16th chapter, one should therefore understand what is duty and what is not duty by the regulations of the scriptures. Knowing such rules and regulations, one should act so that he may gradually be elevated. Okay, so one who is directly... Okay, so here's from the purport. One who is directly engaged in these devotional activities is to be understood as having studied all the Vedic literatures. Maybe not in this lifetime, but he has come to the conclusion perfectly. Okay, so that kind of brings us up to two very prominent points that are made in the purport, that if we understand them and can apply them, we can develop a very strong foundation for our devotional service. Because it's all based upon, this is coming from Shastra, it's coming from Guru and the Acharyas, so it's foolproof. So let me read these last two sentences. Any member of society who receives diksha, initiation, into the chanting of the Lord's holy names, must strictly obey the four regulative principles: no eating of meat, fish, or eggs, no illicit sex, no intoxication, and no gambling. A spiritually initiated person neglecting these principles will certainly fall from his elevated position of liberation. On Monday, Mother Mahamaya gave class, and she cited she does the database, which is, I think it's been accepted as a GBC project. I think that's what the point she made. So there are 4,700 devotees. It took diksha, initiation from Srila Prabhupada. And I sent her a text message a couple days later when I was looking, I was prepping for this class, and I asked, well, how many are still active and how many are following the principles? And she said, well, I have a number for those that are active, and it's about 1,200 to 1,300 out of the 47. So it's about 30%. And she didn't know, how many had observed their vows. I'm working closely with Mahatma Prabhu in discussion with him. He said that he's taught a workshop on vows. And his observation over the years, and he's been around a long time, I think he joined in 69 or 70, that about 90% of devotees don't keep their promise. They don't maintain their vows over the period of their devotional career. So here's a really beautiful quote from a letter that Srila Prabhupada wrote in 1971 to Nityananda Prabhu. Prabhupada wrote it from Delhi. I thank all of you very much for accepting me as your spiritual master. And I promise that I will take you back to God, back to home, back to Godhead. I ask you all to promise me to always chant at least 16 rounds, follow the regulative principles, read our books, and try to preach this Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. So, so today, I'm going to focus. This is it's kind of a touchy subject, but it's an important one. It's something that Prabhupada really stressed. Maybe each of you could imagine. It doesn't really won't take much imagination to do this, but just imagine that God is standing right in front of you, and which He is. Okay, and let us say that you make a promise to God. And I'm not asking for any people to speak out on this, but are you willing to follow that promise? Are you ready to make this a really deep commitment? Okay, so just think about that. It's food for thought. Because this is really, as we'll see, I'm going to read different conversations Prabhupada had with devotees to clarify, how do you have the, how do you have the determination to observe all these rules and regulations? Okay, so we're going to get into that. And then in the first Janmashtami celebration, 26 Second Avenue, Prabhupada spoke. I'm inclined to read the whole thing because it's nice. I got to watch the clock, but it's not enough merely to chant holy words. One must be pure inside and out. Chanting impurity brings spiritual advancement. Man becomes impure because he wants to enjoy material pleasure. But the impure can become pure by following Krishna. For all works are transcendental when they are done for Krishna. Okay, here's a... Pay close attention on this, this is key. Beginners in Krishna consciousness have a tendency to relax their efforts in a short time. But to advance spiritually, we must resist this temptation and continually increase our efforts and devotion. We should continue to purify ourselves both in action and thought. So that was from the Hare Krishna Explosion, Hare Griva Prabhu's book. And it's the first Janmashtami celebration in ISKCON, September 8, 1966. Here's an interesting quote from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya 17. This is Lord Chaitanya, when he went to South India, he took a Brahmin along as an assistant, as kind of a servant, Kala Krishna Das. And he got, Lord Chaitanya wasn't very satisfied with Kala Krishna Das because he got involved with a woman, fell down, fell under the control of these gypsies, and then Lord Chaitanya himself had to go through the headache of pulling him out of the mess. And then Lord Chaitanya, he wanted to get someone to replace Kala Krishna Das who had the determination to not be swayed by material desires. So in the purport to this, when Lord Chaitanya is asking for another person to replace Kala Krishna Das, Prabhupada says, Maya is so strong that unless one is determined not to fall victim, even the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot give protection. Talk about a heavy statement. But this keys in on the determination. Where do you get the determination? So, how to keep our vows or become properly situated if we haven't been able to follow? Okay, so let's get into a success story first. There was one very wonderful, very exalted Vaishnava who I had the good fortune of serving at different times over the years, engaging his empowered preaching propensities in Mayapur. And this is Bhakti Tirtha Swami. At the end of his time in the material world, he had this really heavy cancer where he was in excruciating pain 24/7. And it was such that he had difficulty even sleeping. There was so much pain. And but sometimes his caregivers noticed that he would purposely not sleep. He would keep himself awake. And of course he was chanting. And so then Radhanath Swami, who was part of that care team, Radhanath Swami spent the last days with Bhakti Tirtha Swami. I think it was last month, maybe 2 months. He was there for quite a while. And Maharaj said to Radhanath Swami, said to Bhakti Tirtha Swami, said, Maharaj, you've done so much service over the years. You don't worry. You don't have to. Krishna will understand. You don't have to chant. Sleep. You're sick now. And Bhakti Tirtha Swami, no. I promised Prabhupada the time of initiation, and I haven't missed one day. I've chanted 20 rounds every single day, and I'm not going to change that. So that's a powerful success story. Now, why do devotees break their vows? One contributing factor may be the day and age we're living in. 100 years ago, serious business deals would be consummated with a handshake. And divorce was virtually non-existent, even in America. It didn't happen. So now it's a lot. Now we have, what is it? I think in India it's still 1 out of 1,000 divorce rate. But in America, I think it's right around 46 or 47. I think it's gone down a little bit because many young people don't get married anymore, so there's no question of divorce. They just, they got their revolving door of partners or whatever. So those are factors. We're in a culture where commitment isn't taken so seriously. There's a pastime. When Prabhupada started preaching in Mauritius, there was one gentleman, his name was Mr. Tilak, spelled differently than the Tilak we put on every morning, but he was a very influential, one of the most influential persons in Mauritius. And Prabhupada just pulled him in. He was actually an Arya Samaj member. Arya Samaj, they don't really accept the deity. They're kind of atheistic. Not kind of, they are. But this Mr. Tilak was very impressed with Prabhupada, particularly his emphasis on simple living and high thinking. And, against the wishes of his wife, he donated a farm. His wife didn't even know about it. He did it on the sly. And constantly, devotees were making major mistakes. And then they'd go to Mr. Tilak to bail them out, to pull the strings or whatever. So Mahatma Prabhu, he served there at one point. I think this was... first time I served with him was way back in 1991. I think it was just prior to that, before he returned to America. And so he was having a discussion with Mr. Tilak, and they were going over all of the amazing mistakes that devotees had made. And, Mr. Tilak was like, it's horrible. It was so difficult for me because of these stupid big mistakes that were constantly being made. And then Mahatma asked him, well, why did you continue to help? And he said, because I promised Srila Prabhupada that I would do that. So even though, because that was a culture that he came from. So that's a challenge, in our culture. generally, when we can, when we think about it, the first thing that pops out of our mouth when there's a consideration of why someone or maybe ourselves broke the vows, well, I didn't have the spiritual strength. Okay, so where's the spiritual strength come from? It's kind of a circular reasoning a little bit. If we're performing sadhana, then we get strength, we get determination. But if we don't follow sadhana, then we don't have it, or whatever. But then, well, how do we get the determination to do our practices, follow the vows? So this is a question. Here's a conversation between Prabhupada and Chandracharya. I don't personally know him. I don't know if anybody here does. Chandana Acharya. One time you said that Krishna consciousness is not difficult. But to remain determined, that is difficult. Determination is difficult, Prabhupada. That determination comes by tapasya. Therefore, we've got rules and regulations. If you follow the rules and regulations, then you will be determined. Otherwise, you will be a victim of maya. The rules and regulations is there just to keep you fixed up in your determination. If you don't follow, then you will fall down. Chandanacharya, but also requires determination to follow the tapasya. This is pretty heavy what Prabhupada says here. I'm going to read it. Anyway, because it really gets down to some real nitty gritty. Then if he cannot, then he is cat and dog. He's not a human being. Why he should accept initiation? Let him remain a cat and dog. He promises to follow. If he cannot follow, then he is nothing but cat and dog. Okay, so I'm going to skip a little bit. Similarly, before the fire, before the deity, before guru, before devotees, he is promising something. If he does not follow, then he is cat and dog. So if he keeps his... So there's a difference. Human beings, they have this ability to use their free will. I mean, look, you know, cats and dogs don't. They don't have that capacity. Human beings, they can make conscious decisions. Okay, so it's a similar question, you know, like how do we get the, you know, Chandracharya asks, how do we get the determination to follow our vows? It's a similar question, and we've all heard it. How do we become sincere? Prabhupada's response, by becoming sincere. So that was his answer to that. So this is, you know, there's a little bit more conversation, but this answer reveals kind of the fundamental principle, fundamentals of spiritual advancement. It comes down to choice. We actually have a choice. We can choose. We chose to take initiation, or we're maybe going to choose to do that. We also can choose not to, you know, to break our vows. It's a choice that we have. Okay. I'm sorry if I turned everybody off by reading that heavy point, but it's actually a point that when we come to the human stage form of life, we have choice that other, you know, living entities don't have. I'm going to read kind of getting into the whole point about spiritual strength. You know, this is something that I need spiritual strength to follow the rules and regulations. But Prabhupada didn't really accept this as the ultimate answer. So here's a question, or here's a discussion between Hari Sari and Srila Prabhupada. The process is to follow some rules and regulations. But they say, how do you get the strength to follow the rules and regulations? Prabhupada. That is not your business. That is Krishna's business. You follow Krishna. If you cheat Krishna, then you'll be cheated. That's all. Krishna does not cheat you. You create a situation to cheat yourself. And Maya will make an arrangement so that you are cheated. This is Maya's business. Sorry. So it's a question of honesty? Prabhupada, yes. You promise no illicit sex? No. Before God, before spiritual master, before fire? And you play hypocrisy. So it's about the attitude. In the preface to Nectar of Instruction, Srila Prabhupada says that advancement in Krishna consciousness is dependent upon the attitude of the practitioner. Okay, so how does this connect? If our attitude is to ask, how can I follow and pray to Krishna, pray to Prabhupada, please, enable me to follow. How can I do this? Give me the strength, the determination. If that's the attitude, Krishna will give us the intelligence, inspiration, and strength to do it. If our attitude is to see our reasons why we can't follow, Krishna will help us find those reasons. So if Krishna will help us either way, why not choose the high road? Yeah, it's a difficult. You know, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would say that the path of the Vaishnava is filled with many thorns, but it's also like unbelievable bliss and satisfaction if we do these austerities, right? Everyone knows. Okay. So one thing that happens when a devotee say he falls down, breaks the principles, there's this whole phenomena of guilt. And maybe he'll beat himself up, to you put it in the American vernacular. And he's a good person because he feels guilty about it. But the more guilty he feels, the less strength he has to kind of recover and get situated. The point is, the real understanding that if we, the problem is really solved when we take personal responsibility. I'm not fouling, and there's no reason I'm not fouling other than I've made the conscious choice not to follow. With this attitude, we can improve. We take shelter of Krishna, we can pray to him. We are in a position to make a conscious choice to follow our premise. Okay. So that's what I've got to say about it. And maybe there's some questions, comments, reflections, chastisements. Maharaj? Thank you. Welcome back, Maharaj.
I think the problem becomes complicated because of that statistics you were giving, that such a high percentage. So, you know, if you can't beat them, join them. In other words, it's the way of the world. It's just the way things are. So we have to be realistic. Of course, the point that Srila Prabhupada took very seriously, and you were mentioning how even earlier you said business is done in the 1900 years ago just on the strength of a handshake, and people kept their word. That may be there, but people kind of relate to what's going on at the present time. So if that's the sociology, or that's what's the social surround, is that 90% don't follow, well, then naturally the mind will tell me that if I don't follow, it's not all that bad. It becomes kind of a normal thing. We may feel a little pinch in our consciousness when we hear how much Srila Prabhupada was disappointed. He even said they become cat and dog if you don't keep your promise. You promised before the sun, before the fire, before the brahmanas, before the deity. And, you know, Prabhupada even expressed shock sometimes, how they're not even a gentleman. But somehow we just flow with the flow, and I was in one temple where a devotee actually went so far as to say, "Oh, you haven't fallen down yet? You'll get there." In other words, he was mature. He was like a senior devotee. He already went through the stage. It's almost he was assuming everyone's, you know, what is it, ashes all fall down. Everyone's going to fall down. And that kind of thinking or so-called preaching really has to be combated. And of course, it's not an easy thing how to do it. But as Prabhupada said, we don't, on the one hand, it's a mass movement. On the other hand, Prabhupada said, I'm not looking for many stars, just one moon. So at least individually, we should not become proud just because we're following the basic vows, if we are. But at the same time, we should feel very, very, very fortunate. And in that spirit, try to help make even our possibly fallen God brothers and God sisters fortunate also. Just some comment, if you have some feedback.
Very nice. One thing that because we're living in a culture where people don't keep their commitments, that's a transformation that we can personally try to go through. If we make a, if I tell Prem Govinda that I'm going to call him today, and I don't call him, I've broken my commitment. So if I do call him, then that starts kind of momentum towards keeping commitments. And if we just are aware of how important, and actually, if I keep my commitments, I feel much better about myself. Like when someone you can all reflect on when someone's made a big commitment to you and haven't honored it. I mean, how do we feel when we see that person the next time? You know, it's, we don't have, there's a loss of, we feel a little bit betrayed. We feel not respected. So that's part, it seems like, just going through a transformation in every aspect of our lives will help us. You know, we condition ourselves to keeping commitments. And this is the most important commitment. This is the commitment that will bring us back to the spiritual world if we follow it. If we break it, good luck. You know, it's a very difficult road that one has to follow. Okay, Tita D. Mooney, Prabhu is going to give me the sauce, I can tell.
Well, this is really a secondary point, and it doesn't, it's not
speak
enough time.
Close, I mean, to the mic.
The main point is great. But this is a secondary historical catch. 100 years ago, people weren't doing business deals just on a handshake. And then 100, 200 years ago, maybe they were some on small business deals. But they, I mean, Noonansville was just down the street, and this whole place was frontier. They would come through the muck to Noonansville because it was a courthouse to sign legal documents for land. So there was, you know, 100 years ago, it was 1920. I mean, there's marriage certificates. There's, you know, I mean, sometimes we have this rosy picture that somehow everything was just so great 100, 200, 300 years ago because there's problems we no longer have to deal with. It's all dead history. Whereas now, in the present, we got problems. Oh, my God. But it's this, you know, our problems today, I mean, they had problems in the Gaudiya Math. You know, it's a little bit primal to the self and its relationship to the conditional energy and to Krishna. It's a big topic.
All right, I'm standing partially corrected by a historian.
That's a historical detail. I'm sure there were some deals done.
But it definitely there's been a change in the divorce rate. You'll agree on that.
Yeah, there's a lot of contributing factors to that. Right. The statistics in divorce are pretty high.
Okay, so, Maharaj?
I don't want to make this a whole debate about minutiae. But I took a course in the law of business contracts. And when you're dealing with land, it has to be written. But unless they changed in the last few years, when a business contract that's not dealing with real estate, it's actually, there are legal remedies if it's broken. In other words, a verbal agreement is legally binding still. I'm not saying that, therefore, people keep their agreements. That's why there's so many lawyers. We shouldn't miss the forest for the trees. We do have to recognize that there was that bump. Remember that bumper sticker? It said, "Remember when sex was dirty, but the air was clean." In other words, you go back to the 50s and 60s, even our own lifetime. Some of us. We know that there was a little bit more morality and, you know, there's something going on. So, about the handshake thing, we can let that pass. But in general, it's a fact that Kali Yuga has... Gopi Puranadana was giving a class and he was saying how even in India, of course, the divorce rate is still very low in India. But as far as in general, the culture, he was saying, I've been in India for 30 years, and even in these 30 years, I've seen so much degradation, so much reduction of morality and ethics. Yeah. So generally, Kali Yuga is moving very quickly. Therefore, we should move a little more quickly in becoming strong.
Ragatmaka? Mother Ragatmaka? Oh, Mahamaya first.
Maharaj, I agree with you about this handshaking thing, because when a person makes a declaration, like a vow, like when we do when we get initiated, what we say, we're responsible for what we say. So when we take a vow, we're making a promise, we're making a declaration. And okay, everybody's been talking about integrity, but nobody's said that particular word. I've taken many courses on integrity, not in ISKCON, but it doesn't matter. It still rings true that integrity, the highest definition that I've heard is to honor one's word as one's very self. And, you know, it includes trusting ourselves and then other people trusting us. If we can't trust ourselves, if we'll say whatever and it doesn't mean anything to us, why would anybody else take us seriously? So what you're describing, Maharaja, at the handshake, is that people have integrity, that they could be trusted to keep their word. And there's also like a distinction between integrity and morality. Morality is more like honesty. But, you know, integrity is about our word. And that's just, anyway, this is my two cents. Thank you.
You know, in ISKCON, the practice is that very young devotees, sometimes as young as 12, sometimes even less, get initiated. They make these vows. They don't really know what sex is all about and how strong they're going to be in 10 years down the road. So I'm just wondering how this is just kind of, it's done very kind of easy. You it's an easy step to take to get first initiation, and then you make the vows in front of all the Vaishnavas with the fire yajna in front of the deities. So I just wonder if that's actually a good practice.
A good practice for young, very young people.
To make the vows.
Well, it's very common in South Indian culture still today, you know, Upanayan. My friend Gopinath, he's the doctor in Denver, who's going to be coming here to teach the Healthy Aging Workshop, and he just recently did amazing research on the physiological impact of chanting the Hare Krishna mantra on the human body. That has the potential to really shift the paradigm, you know, in a big way, you know, throughout the world. It's kind of the beginning research, but there's a whole team coming together with that. But his son just had they're going to India just for the Upanayan ceremony, which is Brahminical initiation. So again, these are relative considerations. You know, it depends upon the modes of material nature that a person is situated in. Even at the age of 12, someone who's coming from, you know, their family is very sattvic, and there's a huge focus in the family culture on worshiping Krishna, then, you know, it doesn't seem like it's something that's out of the ordinary. But, you know, maybe for Western children, you know, maybe it is a good idea to wait. It's a personalized situation. I think that has to be always, you know, time, place, and circumstance decision. Madame Prabhu?
A couple points. I was thinking of in the verses, these verses here are actually giving you a nice time, place, and circumstance for preaching, to understand, you know, one man's food's another man's poison. Because sometimes we used to use the word cookie cutter presentation, that you can, Prabhupada was very strong and bold in his preaching, and a lot of times as beginning devotees, we wanted to have that same, in like the apprentice that hit the horse's throat. You know, we thought that one idea would work for everything. So this kind of like takes a little bit of the edge off, understanding that some people, what they do is not so wrong for them because of their particular condition, like in today's verse. So you think of like King Solomon, where he was known for great wisdom for applying the law in time, place, and circumstance. What's good for one person, how to be non-envious, to recognize where a person is at and give them the appropriate instruction to facilitate their growth, as opposed to not doing it. A couple other comments was, integrity is also used in the mechanical world, too. They use that same word that, like for instance, they would use the idea of eggshell is extremely powerful in holding weight. You can practically can't crush an eggshell when the integrity of the shell is intact. So, but if one little part of it is compromised, another one of the words they use, then the whole shell has no strength at all. So, because of just sometimes I think that it's the same idea, that your integrity is your overall strength. And if you compromise one part of it, then all the strength is reduced a lot in every different department. And one other comment was, you had mentioned about guilt can continue the downward spiral of not having strength if one feels guilty. And I was thinking that there's lamentation and regret, which are similar to the guilt. Yeah. And we remembering that verse, the 11:242 verse. You know that one? Bhakti or... not that one. The 11:20, 27, and 28.
So there's a healthy part of regret. But if we just beat ourselves up and are continually dwelling on it, it's actually could be a psychological adjustment. I'm actually a good person. I feel guilty about it. See how bad I feel about it? So I'm okay. I'm a good guy. And then you don't do anything about it.
I ran into a person like that. He was going to see a psychiatrist. And I asked him what he was there for. And he says he feels guilty when he does something bad. So he wanted the psychiatrist to help him overcome that. And I was a little younger back then, maybe 30 years ago. I said, well, that's your last aspect of your human form of consciousness you're asking him to get rid of. The idea that you're feeling guilty means that you could understand. Like the word shame is almost antiquated now. Mm-hmm. For you to have shame, you had to know you did something wrong.
Yeah. So that's an important thing to acknowledge. Take responsibility, no question about it, but just to dwell in guilt, you know, and I think that's the point. You know, I had a discussion with a devotee a few days ago that's been inactive for many, many years. He couldn't get out of it because of all the guilt thing.
But he's using that as an excuse, not in its own right. In its own right, you're feeling, I shouldn't have done this. So therefore, let me correct it.
Yeah, amend. You know, apologize to Prabhupada, you know, the deities, the devotees, and amend.
So it's
correct.
A secondary
because we have
symptom.
This free choice. It's not taken away from us.
So he was using that to play a particular racket. So
that's it. That's my story. You know, I got a story. I was late, you know, meeting Adi Dev yesterday. Because I was really busy. I was maxed out, and really sorry, I gave. But I had a good story. So that's our good story to give it. You know, give the excuse. But we need to be accountable, responsible, apologize, and make amends. And then things will move, and we can rectify. Anything else? I'll go with Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.